What's good, everybody? Welcome to Origin Story, the podcast that interviews creators about where they came from to understand how they got here. My name is Philip Russell, and I am with my co-host,
Ben Thorpe.
And Ben, we are back again with a favorite from season one, game developer and artist Neil Jones, who is the creator of Aerial Knights Never Yield. And we kind of just talked to him on this episode about making a huge update called Da Update for the game that kind of addressed a lot of the different criticisms and, you know, suggestions that people had about the initial release. And we just wanted to kind of pick his brain a bit about what it was like kind of working on this update and also kind of engaging with fans and fan feedback in a big way. So really cool conversation.
Yeah, Phil, should we keep having, season one guests back on the show? This felt nice, you know?
It's like we're getting more friends, Ben.
That's exactly how this felt. It was like that friend that you got to catch up with, that you haven't talked to in a while, and then you peek back into your life, and you're like, wow, things are going surprisingly well.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, this felt just like fun. It's a fun conversation. We talk about the game. We talk about everything from why Piccolo is a black man to hot takes around Cyberpunk being an actually good game. And then also just, you know, Neil talks a bit about what it's like with the industry currently as we're seeing all these different kind of mergers and acquisitions between, you know, the big guys like Sony and Microsoft, and how that feels, especially as an indie developer.
Yeah, I feel like Neil is so good at kind of breaking down his perspective on all of this stuff as an indie dev. And like, last time he kind of talked about how hard it is to kind of stay on the top of the charts and to stay kind of in the public view. And again, I think he just has interesting perspectives on like this industry that is kind of eating itself right now, it feels like. And he described a lot of these big mergers, I think, as like Game of Thrones-like. And so, you know, he's happy to watch it happen until, you know, maybe it'll start hurting him down the line. He doesn't know.
For sure. So, yeah, that's kind of our conversation ahead in this episode. Before we jump in, I just wanted to, you know, thank everybody who's been checking out our kind of new side project called Study Hall. Seems like it's been getting some good reception, and, you know, it's definitely in this phase of fluidity where we're figuring out exactly what the format's going to be. So I think I can speak for both of us when I say, like, hit us up with any kind of feedback you have in terms of what would make the show like the best kind of version it could be. And we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, even if it is like, don't let Ben just talk for 25-30 minutes again. I respect and understand that, so like, do send that advice in.
Exactly. And then as always, if you enjoy the show, definitely rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, even if you don't end up leaving a written review. And the same goes for Spotify and wherever else you're listening. So with that, how about we jump right into the show? Yeah, I think maybe just to start us off, like, Neil, welcome back to the show. We're glad to have you back on Origin Story. And maybe just to get us started, we'd love to just hear, like, how you've been? You know, what's new? How's life? What have you been up to?
No, thanks for having me back. I really appreciate it. Been really good. Just tired working on the game. Just trying to keep up with everything, trying to make sure I have time to play games as well.
For sure. No, I mean, I think, you know, so we brought you back on because, you know, Never Yield, has it been about a year or a little bit less than a year since it came out? And you have this big update coming out called Da Update. We'd love to, you know, spend some time talking about, you know, how that whole process came to be, why you're making this update, and, you know, what can we expect on this update?
Yeah, so it's been less than a year. It's been about 8 months or so. This is pretty much going to be the last update. So instead of doing a lot of small, tiny like updates, I just wanted to do it all at once, you know, push it out and just kind of be done with it. And I spent a lot of time just like reading comments and watching people play. You know, I'm big on watching just Twitch people stream the game, and I'll sit there and comment and give them pointers and stuff like that while they're playing. And you know, there was definitely some feedback. It was a lot of feedback, you know, about multiple things, and you know, things that I wanted to add to the game that I didn't get to, and specifically the story. I always you know, had trouble with that ending. I didn't think it was like clear enough. I wanted people to kind of like come to their own conclusions, but you know, I could admit that, you know, I'm not an animator, and like it kind of missed the mark a little bit from what I was aiming for. So I just wanted to always go back and take another like shot at making that just more clear and putting a little bit more time into it, because you know, launching a game the first time around is just like a lot of stuff I had to deal with that I wasn't expecting. So yeah, I'm really grateful that I had the opportunity to take all the reviews and take all the feedback and kind of just do this one clean giant update, and people are like excited about it, and you know, it's getting some promotion, and you know, from what I've seen early, people really like what I've done with it.
Yeah, I mean, can you maybe talk about that? Seems like a really great relationship to have with like fans of the game, where it's like you're watching them play and you're like, okay, cool, like maybe here's something that I can put into the game. I mean, what was that like?
Yeah, so I don't really like people telling me what to do. I don't know if
totally.
I don't know if people knows that, but it just bugs me. So you know, when the game first came out, people were like, oh, it needs an endless mode, oh, it needs leaderboards, and I was like, there's a reason I didn't do those things. But you know, with some time, you know, I kind of can admit that, you know, hey, you know, this is their game too. If they want these things, I should consider it. So I did a version of those things, kind of meet in the middle of. So we put in leaderboards in the game, but it's not directly, you know, here's your name, here's your score type of leaderboard. It's more of a like pools, like there's tiers to it. So, and you know, your time, you fall into that certain tier. Because I do want it to be fun. I don't want people sitting there stressing the whole time about a number or a specific time.
Do you feel comfortable talking about the story? I don't know.
Depends on when it's coming out.
If you're worried. Okay. I don't know if you're worried about like spoilers or something.
No. When are you planning on dropping this?
It'll be after the update's already out, for sure.
Okay. Yeah. If it's after the update's out, that's fine. Yeah, so the point of the story was always that there are two characters, and they're pretty much twins or twin brothers, but they're fighting. It's a reference to my struggle. One is supposed to be, you know, Neil, and one is supposed to be Ariel Knight. And it's supposed to just be my struggle of me trying to achieve something and me holding myself back from that thing. And at the end of the game, it's like one of those things, like winning and taking over type of deal. And, you know, it wasn't very clear. People thought that, you know, there was just one character until they got to the end of the game. You know, there's a lot of stuff in the game, especially with the lyrics at the end of the last level. It kind of breaks a lot down. And then there's still like a lot of, you know, hidden stuff that I put in the game to allude to other things going on. But, you know, the core of it is just my struggle between, you know, this dream fantasy version of myself, and that I want to be this great thing, but also reality always pulling you back. You know, have to keep getting back up, and you have to never yield type of thing.
I can totally see why
maybe people miss that, but I remember feeling that from playing it the first time, especially because that there's that end level where you play both characters racing against one another, and it keeps kind of swapping the perspective, so you're kind of racing against each other, which is such a, like, it was such a great level, and I think does a really good job of expressing that, oh, that, like, you're literally as a player facing off against yourself in some ways.
Yeah, and there's not really any, you can't really lose based off of that kind of story. That's why I never stressed how many deaths you have or anything like that. Never really mattered. It was just like finishing. That's all that really mattered. If you finish the game, then you won.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I think one of the things from our initial interview that I still think about today, even after all the interviews we did since then, is just your point about whether it's game press or just gamers in general, you know, coming to a game or, you know, a piece of creative work and like admitting when you don't know and not trying to like give feedback or ideas to the creator in this way of like, I know everything. And, you know, having that humbling perspective. And I think it's really interesting when you think about updating a game to this extent. And I'm curious, you know, for you, I'm sure you learned a lot just doing the update, but do you think there's anything, you know, now that you've completed the update and it's coming out, that you learned either about the game or about yourself or like what you're taking away from kind of doing this big update to this project?
Yes, you know, it's fine to, you know, get more help. You know, when I first wrote out the notes of like people's feedback and the reviews, a lot of the reviews are really nice, but also, you know, the scores, like the score got bumped down from like nitpicks almost. I felt like things that, you know, wasn't worth knocking down the score for. That's how people, like, some people feel, and that's totally justifiable. So I just kind of kept notes on all of those things. So when I went to make this giant list of things I wanted to fix, I wanted to address all of the reviews so that I can kind of, you know, force their hand to say, hey, they're, you made all of these comments about the game. Now I address all of them. So you should address your review because it's no longer accurate. But, you know, that's up to them. They don't have to, but they do it for the bigger games. So I kind of wanted to see, you know, how far I could push it. And, you know, what is, you know, a perfect game to some people? Because I feel that, you know, no matter what, my game is not going to like get 10s and like 5 out of 5s or anything like that. You know, but if you say, you know, this and that is what's holding this game back from being a 10. So if I fix those things, then, you know, what's the next step? I think that's it's a good conversation to have between like developers and reviewers or anybody critiquing games, is that, you know, if you say these are the critiques and the critiques are addressed, then what's the next step?
That makes sense. I mean, I don't know. There's something that's come into my head just from that is, you know, it's a hard balance for reviewing games, especially when you're thinking about like AAA or AA or really, you know, really indie developed games like yourself. Do you think that maybe there should not different standards, but just. I could imagine like for something like Never Yield, which is a game that you largely developed yourself, it's almost unfair for like a reviewer to, you know, hold it to the same standard as like a game from Ubisoft that has 300 people that developed it. And thinking about that in the context of critique, I wonder if there's like something there in terms of how we approach these kinds of games that should change.
Yeah, I think it's all just personal like feelings. And like, I don't think anybody really has an issue with someone saying, hey, it's just not for me, type of thing. I've never like hit any or knocked anybody for not liking my game, because there's plenty of games out that, you know, just aren't for me. It's the standards. Like, if you're going to review a game and like, you know, be the life or death of a game, and you're doing this for a lot of games, then we need to understand, you know, what you believe to make a good game and what you believe to make a bad game, so that it's consistent across the board. A lot of times I think scores get inflated because of hype and a lot of outside factors that don't really have anything to do with the game. Cause I've played games that like I was told was bad games that, you know, hey, you should not waste your time. And I think Mafia 3 was the thing that woke me up to it the most. I avoided Mafia 3, even though I love black characters and those type of environments. But you know, I played that game, I think it was on PlayStation Plus or something like that. And I was like, this game is amazing. I don't understand like why I didn't like kind of gravitate towards this. But then I remembered I watched a lot of reviews and things like that, that kind of kept me away from it. And that's not to knock reviewers or anything like that. I don't want people to take it that way. It's just the reviews are part of my reasoning for wanting to do this update and help me put together my list of things I want to fix.
Yeah. You've also, I feel like, talked about how quickly, especially with, you know, when you're talking about indie games, they kind of disappear from visibility. They, you know, it's like that there's just this mill and there's so many different options, and yours can come out, get some hype, and then disappear down the list like pretty quickly. I wonder if you can maybe talk about like how it's been for your game, you know, 8 months later. Has it been able to kind of stay on the top a little bit? I did notice that Xbox is making, I think, Never Yield its Games with Gold for February. I mean, how does stuff like that help?
Yeah, no, I think my game has been one of the ones that have got a lot of press because it never really like achieved what it could have as far as, you know, you know, just blowing up in the public with the music and, you know, the art style and the gameplay, and it's really accessible type of game. So, you know, I just got the feedback that, hey, you know, more people should have, you know, kind of noticed the game. I don't think anybody's, any developer is owed success. Just because you make a good game doesn't mean that game should be successful, because there's a lot of things that go into it. But you know, some things just, you know, come out at bad times and just don't work out and whatnot. My game just kind of consistent because people like discover it, and then once they discover it, they talk about it in the music and all these things. I have a lot of stuff going on, and it kept driving the game. And there was always this talk about me doing this update because it wasn't a secret. I was in the Discord asking people all the time, like, what is like, are things that you would like to see if I were to do an update? Pretty much doing everything but confirming it. I think there was always kind of that space and the knowledge that this was coming sooner or later.
I mean, I think I assume that this is probably going to be a positive answer, but yeah, just again, speaking to that, like the Games with Gold and expanding that to like maybe Game Pass or PS Plus or I forget, Nintendo Switch Online. I guess they don't really do it in the same way, but these kind of services where they're giving away the free games for your subscription. I'm curious, like you talked a bit about this in our initial conversation, but do you think this is an important part for indie games to find success, is like having these ways of getting that these big tentpole moments?
Yeah, I think it gets a lot of attention. So me, I just want people to play the game. Like I don't really, I don't really worry too much about how much money the game's going to make or anything like that. As you know, because I had a publisher and I had like a lot of other things kind of set up to help out with that, be it, you know, the vinyl and all these extra things. It did play a factor early on to just kind of figure out what I was going to do, if I was going to have enough to kind of make the next game. But I think, you know, it's a net positive right now, because you see a lot of gamers just saying, I don't want to buy anything. I just want to sign up for this subscription service and get things to play, which I totally understand. Mm-hmm. Younger me would have loved like any of these services to kind of have something new to play every month, or, you know, a bunch of handful of games to like keep me entertained. So I think it's just more of a wait and see thing. I think it's working right now, but, you know, depending on the twists and turns, it could go bad, but hopefully you know, I'm just, you know, kind of hoping for the best. I'm very grateful to be a part of Games with Gold, and, you know, any other things along the line that my game kind of ends up on. But, you know, me, I just like watching people play the game, and I just want to make something that people really enjoy, and whatever gets that to more people, I'm cool with.
Yeah. I kind of wanted to ask your perspective mm-hmm. on, you know, obviously we're in the midst of watching Sony and Microsoft pick up a bunch of these studios. And I know that we've talked before about like the space of like indies and indie creators, and like, how does that landscape look to you now? And like, how are you feeling about, you know, as you're watching these kind of big deals get made, what does that mean for someone like you?
It's really weird. I don't think anybody knows what's going to happen. That's why everybody's yeah. so kind of worried about it. Because, you know, we always known that Sony and Xbox has billions of dollars and can do whatever they want. And, you know, the competition between like studios, AAA studios, have always been like really crazy, especially during November and such. Because, you know, I avoid putting any kind of content out in November, October, or December, just because, you know, the Call of Duties and, you know, the AAAs, they own those spaces. So, you know, indies found our little windows, but we're going to see, you know, what happens. You know, maybe this might be a good thing so that the AAAs kind of spread out their releases a little bit more and don't, you know, aren't more of these random drops that kind of throw people's marketing plans all out of whack. Like me, my update is coming out in the middle of February, in between like four huge AAA games. I'm hoping I don't get buried, and you know I don't get hit with like a cyberpunk trailer the same day as, you know, the drop of my game. But you know, it's real random these days. There's nothing we can really do about it either.
No, that makes sense. I think Ben and I have just been talking a lot about, it's crazy, like every day with the Sony and Bungie thing, and then obviously Microsoft with Bethesda, and then Blizzard. It's just like, it just seems like impossible.
Well, it's stressful, but it's fun. Like, I woke up and saw the Activision thing, and I was like, this is crazy. I felt like it was Game of Thrones or something. I don't know. I weirdly enjoy it, but it also like worries me, because, you know, you're going to run out of studios eventually.
That's hilarious. You know, I think we should definitely highlight the fact that just recently Never Yield had won an award from the Spawnies for music, and I'd love for you just to talk a little bit about that experience. And, you know, obviously I think Khalif Adams has done a lot for Black creators in the space, and kind of watching the award show is really dope to just to see like two Black hosts in that kind of award setting. I mean, that's nothing I've ever seen before.
Yeah, it's weird talking about streamers. I think streamers and developers like are so far apart when it comes to like just this space in general, but we're in the same space. But you know, we have completely different struggles, but also the same struggles. So I'm super proud of Khalif and Spawn on Me and everybody involved with that. It's just, for my own mental health, there's so much to worry about on the dev side that I kind of just compartmentalize things to say, hey, I'm going to worry about the dev stuff. You know, Khalif and all the streamers got their streamer stuff, and I'm going to support them any way I can. But, you know, I got all these devs who, you know, can't even get, you know, a deal from a publisher that I'm trying to kind of help out and, you know, give advice to. And there's just like so much work on that end to do.
Are people, coming to you for advice and stuff because you've obviously had some success in like getting eyeballs on your game? And so do people come to you and say, hey, like, what did this take? And like, how do I get there?
Yeah. I get, we have a Discord with a lot of the Black game developers, and people, you know, hit me up on Twitter and, you know, email me. And hey, even if you're listening to this and you need, you know, somebody's opinion, you can always hit me up. If I got time, I'm always down to like talk and help. But there is a lot of randomness that goes into it. And, you know, Sometimes you just gotta be at the right place at the right time. Like, and I feel like that's what happened to me. You know, with my game coming out that year, that you know, people really wanted to focus on Black creators, and then you know, landing a publisher at a really good time in which the publisher was looking for somebody, and the art style of my game, and you know, everything kind of just worked out. But that really doesn't happen for a lot of people, and you know, I can't tell anybody like follow these exact steps, and then you know, this will happen for you. I don't think anybody could say that, but you know, I can help out with you know, marketing and you know, style and saying, hey, this is a good look. This isn't a good look, type of thing. Because I just really want everybody to be successful. I think the more create different type of creators we have, like the better the space is going to be, the more comfortable. It's going to be for everybody, not even just developers. Like I think that's like streamers and what have you. We just need like just more people that's different in these spaces.
Yeah, I'm curious. Something that we didn't ask, I don't think, on the first conversation, that just hearing you say this is making me think about is, you know, as a writer, I hear a lot of stories about people who maybe are getting like their first book published, and the differences and experience in terms of like going through a publisher and going through an editor, and especially as a person of color, like some experiences that may be negative, and not having any kind of anybody to lean on or get perspective on in that experience. I'm curious for you with publishing Never Yield. You know, what was that experience like going and getting a publisher for the game, and like in those kinds of scenarios, since I don't know, really know anything about it, is it like does the publisher give input in terms of the game, and like do you have to change things based off of the publisher? Like, what's that whole experience like for you, at least with Never Yield?
Yeah, it's weird. It's a lot like it's a lot like starting a new job, a job that you really like, and then your boss at like saying, hey, you should do this differently, and you really want to be like, chill, this is my job, I got this, but also you're like, well, you know, it's my boss, you know, but you know, it's a little bit different. It's not like a boss work situation, you know. Everybody has the best intentions. So, you know, the publisher's not going to come to you and say, hey, let's just do this random thing just because that's how I feel today. They want to make money. And I think if everybody goes into the whole publisher relationship knowing that, you know, the publisher wants to make money, that's their goal. They want you to succeed because they get a cut. And that's all publishers. I don't care where you go. I don't care how nice they are to you, whatnot. That's the end of the day, that's what they're looking for. And if you kind of just keep that in mind when you kind of do the whole thing, and you stick to, you know, the like know what you're willing to like budge on and know what you're willing to not let go. Like there was never going to be a scenario where, you know, my main character wasn't going to be black. Like I don't care who, what, or whatever needed to happen. And if somebody asked me, hey, can you just change the color? No, that was never going to happen. But you know, they say, hey, can you know, add leaderboards into it? You know, that can be more of a conversation.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I just from my personal experience, there was a couple of years ago now, I was working on this essay that was about like it was basically about how like me and my black friend growing up used to view Piccolo from Dragon Ball Z as like a black dude. And yeah, you know, and like kind of working through like why black people have such a close connection to Piccolo as a character. And you know, I was going through the whole editing process at this journal to get it published, and you know, my editor was a white guy, and it was, I think you're bringing up a really important thing that creators, especially new creators, have to think about, is like what are you willing to concede on, and what are you willing to you can't concede on. And for me, it was like he was trying to tell me, like, essentially, he was basically trying to edit what my black experience was like as if he would know. And I had to walk away from that experience more or less. But I think it's a really, you know, really valuable insight for new creators to be like, hey, if this isn't your vision, to be like, you need to walk away. It's not worth it.
There's like I saw this essay or this video essay a long time ago about just why black people gravitate to Dragon Ball Z so much, especially black men. And it's about I forget the details, but basically the thesis was that you know, Goku was like this powerful being from this world far away. And he had this potential inside of him to do crazy great things, but, you know, in public around white people, he just had to hold back. He never kind of put himself out there. But when he was around his people who were like him, he was like just this Super Saiyan. And then he had this history that, you know, he never would know, just like Black people in America. This is amazing history that he'll never know. Other than being told about it through like stories and having to hunt down things. And I just thought it was like really interesting and a good look, a breakdown, because I never even thought about that. I like when someone said, why do you like Dragon Ball Z so much compared to like other things? I couldn't even tell them. But then I watched that video. And I was like, that really makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. I mean, I haven't met any Black person that's watched Dragon Ball Z that doesn't like Dragon Ball Z. And I think what you're talking about, like, especially that thing about like Goku having this this history that he doesn't have access to and he doesn't know about. I think I've seen that same video. Like, that really resonated with me too, and that's kind of one of the reasons I wrote the piece. But
Piccolo is definitely Black also.
Yeah.
I don't see why people like don't understand that. He's the blackest character.
And he's got drip.
Right? Dope. but yeah, I forgot what we were talking about. Back to the update. So in the update, what I ended up landing on, there was like hundreds of changes. I know this is super random, just to go back a little bit, but I got this thing pulled up to remind me to say this. There was like hundreds of small updates, you know, because I found stuff along the way. But the core of it was like adding new bonus levels. People wanted, like, they really liked that really hard bonus level, but was really frustrated that they couldn't just like replay it. They had to go through the level to kind of replay it. So I was like, let me, you know, give them what they want plus add some to it. So I made a couple more new music. I got to work with Dan again to do the new music for the new, like, endless mode. Because that's another thing people wanted, was this weird endless mode. And I was like, I don't know if endless mode would be fun. But I could do it in my own kind of way in which you can enjoy it for a little bit. And then, you know, my take on the leaderboards, I wanted to do a mobile version, just overhaul the entire UI, because the UI was like the thing that, you know, bugged me the most, because I'm very much a Persona 5 type of person. And I wanted to add so much more style to that UI. But those kind of UIs just take kind of years to really master, and like you have to do so many iterations of it. So I was really happy I got to do another iteration of it and clean up some of the graphics, and like we talked about the story and level updates. I had to fix that one achievement that everybody had an issue with, but I fixed it, so I don't want to hear nothing else about it. making sure we made the game work with the Xbox accessibility controller, because I love watching people use that thing, and making sure that like as many people like can play it. Because, you know, I do the best I can, you know, but I'm only one person, but I want to make sure I at least try to have that option in there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Do you maybe want to talk just briefly about, you know, what are the things that, especially the indie games that you're playing right now?
Oh, I got a list. Hold on. Let me open it up. So I've been like catching up on indie games. So After Party, super dope. And Inscription, like that game like creeps me out, but I just love card games so much.
Yeah.
Especially like single player card games. I don't like the, you know, multiplayer stuff going down, especially with I tried the Yu-Gi-Oh! Multiplayer one that just came out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just ain't for me. But because the new type of card game Yu-Gi-Oh! Is, but I like the classic Yu-Gi-Oh! You know, I'm really, you know, nostalgic of that. I play a little bit of Slime Heroes. I got an early preview of Samurai Zero from another Black creator. I've been playing a lot of stuff. Cat Quest 2 is what I'm all into right now. So yeah, I'm just trying to make up ground for, you know, the 2 years I've been working on my game to kind of play all these other things.
Yeah, listen, I'm taking a list. Who, you know, we were kind of talking about, like, who else, are there other people that you would recommend that we kind of reach out to that would be good to talk to?
Yeah, so my homie Justin Woodward, he He worked on the Jay and Silent Bob pixel game. That one's really fun. I played that over the summer. Anybody on that, we did this freshman class of 2021.
Oh, yeah. I think we I want to say we linked to that, didn't we?
We might have, yeah. Most
of those games are out now. So I would pretty much talk to anybody on that list. Because all those games are, you know, really fun to play.
Sick. I actually want to backtrack because I'm interested with the endless mode. You know, one thing that you were pretty particular and distinguishing when we initially talked was that, you know, unlike an endless runner, never yield, like each level you have deliberately placed all the objects in order to you know, to make a certain experience for each level. I'm curious, with like an endless mode, what was that like? And you know, yeah, can you just talk about that? Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a pretty different game. I think people will notice that when they play it. They're either like it or they'll be like, oh yeah, Neil was right. This wasn't like something for me. So I kind of put it in there as like, hey, this is what y'all asked for. Here you go. To kind of see where it is. So, you know, I'm really particular about hand placing things in the level. I wasn't ever going to just make a level that instantly kept spawning. So I put it in my high school gym. I modeled my high school gym. And you're just running laps, and then the objects or obstacles spawn. You know, depending on where you are, you get a, you know, you just count how many laps you ran and, you know, how long you survived that way. So it was more of a, like a survival runner, but endless mode just sounds cooler. Survival mode, yeah.
That's dope. I mean, I just really love like that personal connection that I think with this game you've incorporated into basically every aspect. Like I really, as a nonfiction writer, that's something that I really, you know, relate to. And I'm curious, you know, now that this game is going to be out, it's the final update. I remember you mentioned that maybe there could be a Never Yield 2 in the future. What do you think you want to work on next? And, you know, feel free to be vague or whatever in that question.
I even put the answer to that question is an after credit screen. So I did a really super dope after credit screen just to see like how cool it would look. And like I sent it to somebody, I was like, what do you think? They was like, that's dope. I was like, well, it's going in. you know, it's this really cool scene. You know, you said this is coming out after the thing, but it puts out there what the next game would be. And the title and everything, and like, oh, wow. It's my favorite thing. So we're gonna, it really depends on the players at that point. Like I need these reviews. If you like what you saw in that end credit screen, you could probably just look it up right now. If the game's the update's already out, just like go on YouTube and be like Never Yield ending, you know, update, whatever. And see what that looks like. But I just need reviews and like people to play it and to know that, you know, this is what y'all want. And I'll make more of it eventually. I think I'm going to make something else next, but you know,
you'll come back to it. It's something that you'll return to.
Definitely.
Awesome. Well,
probably.
One day.
We'll see.
In some form.
We'll see how y'all act. You know, y'all was, like people giving me so much heat over these endless modes and this like achievement stuff. I'm wait and see, because people act real reckless online.
Are you hoping that people come crawling back and are like, "All right, you were correct.
Endless mode mistake." Everybody wants to be a game dev until it's time to be a game dev. I made decisions in the first game. I still stand by, but I backed off of a lot of them because I was like, well, this is what people want. And I want, you know, I want to make this the most game, like the most beloved game, you know, as far as a runner it can be. So, you know, they wanted to drive. So I gave them the control.
It's a classic case of people think they know what they want, but they right. don't.
Now if the review scores go down after this update, I'm mad at everybody. Nobody talked to me. I'm blocking everybody.
Hilarious. Ben, do you have any other questions for Neil? Do you think that we haven't touched on yet?
No, I don't think so. Neil, are there any questions that we haven't asked you that you want?
You haven't asked me about the mobile version.
Oh yeah, we haven't.
I didn't even realize there was a mobile version.
When does that drop? What was it? You said you completely refurbished the UI. What was that like? Why mobile?
It was a pain. Like the number one advice I give to people trying to do something like this is not to go multi-platform. Don't ever do it. I'm never doing this again. It's like there's literally like 8 or 9 versions of the game now. And I have to update all of them across the board. And each of them, like, there can be different bugs for each of them. And then these two new ones, you know, Apple and the Google Play Store, it's exactly the experience that you would get on every other version of it. So it was really hard to make sure that it ran really smoothly, and all that content was still there, because the game was never built to be on mobile. But I'm also never going to put anything out that doesn't feel right. So that's what added about 2 months to this update, was just kind of making sure that the port felt right. And, you know, I got help from this awesome studio out of the UK who helped me with the leaderboards and doing this whole mobile port and, you know, helping me fix a lot of these bugs, because, you know, I could not have done it this quickly without them. They're called beta adjusters. And, you know, they're in the credits and they're, you know, on the page, so you could look them up. Really cool people. I really hope I get to work with them again.
Awesome. And that's going to be coming out the same time that the update's coming out, or is it going to be a little bit later for the iOS, Android?
So yeah, that's the thing. I'm aiming for it to be out in February as well. But it just really depends on like Apple and Play Store's approval process. I have no deals with Apple or Google Play, so I could talk all the crap about them and how long how hard they make this whole process. And I was like, hey, can y'all help me out with X, Y, and Z? No reply. Like, getting a hold of anybody over there is freaking terrible. And, you know, I see why a lot of developers don't like going to mobile. People ask for it, and I want to kind of give them another option. So, my fault. We'll see if it happens again.
that makes sense. I mean, even with this podcast, you know, like, we host it on Apple, and in typical Apple fashion, the analytics, for instance, like, literally the page doesn't work unless you're using Safari, and, you know, there's nobody to contact. You can hardly get any data. So we feel your pain in that regard.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to like just host it like on my like own website, to just be like, hey, if you want the mobile version, you got to download it here. Just so I wouldn't have to go through them and then them take their cut and all that. This is trash, like, trying to get anything on mobile, and it's just the worst. But I hope people have fun with it, so it'd be like worth all the trouble. We'll kind of see. I'm aiming for the end of February sometime, but, you know, it's pretty much up to them at this point, whenever they kind of approve it and like host it on their store. I'm going to put it on my Twitter and, you know, announce it as soon as it's live. But I'm just kind of tired.
Yeah, I think that's all we got for you. Thanks for coming and talking to us. I really appreciate it.
No, thanks for like having me come back and like being able to like complain about all these things. I really, if you're listening now and you've played the game, please go leave a review. Just like, even if you it wasn't for you, just like let me know what parts of it that you didn't like. Just so that I can know for, the next game that I make, what people didn't like. Reviews are like way more important than I think people realize, because it really, dictates, next steps. It might not address, the thing that you want right now, but, it helps for when I'm thinking about the next game, or when I'm thinking about an update or whatnot. So not even just for my game, for any game that you really enjoyed or last played, hey, just go leave a review, and even if it's negative, try to say something nice so that the person who makes it doesn't feel like trash, because these things are really hard.
And also people can know that you already like spent a lot of time, it sounds like, listening to feedback and trying to incorporate it into your game. So it's not going nowhere.
Yeah, I literally read almost everything that's out there about it, especially involving any kind of like real criticism that I could do anything about, you know. The only thing I didn't want to change was any of like the core mechanics, like so the running, jumping, sliding, that was always going to stay, but everything else was kind of up for grabs.
Great. Well, you know, this season we're definitely trying to just have some more like informal conversations about like gaming news or like a game that really resonated with people. So, you know, Neil, this is an open invitation that it's like if you ever want to come back on the show and talk about a game that you love or an anime or whatever, you know, we'd love to figure out something.
Real quick then, since you opened the door.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Cyberpunk was one of the best games that came out that year. I know people had issues with it, but the whole system but I think people were way too harsh on it and got like you know how the hype train builds up a game to get like really high risk? The hate train like drove that game into the ground, and people didn't realize how revolutionary the skill tree was, because you know you could feel however you feel about the game and the story and whatnot, but that skill tree was amazing. The art in that game was amazing. And the way people like downplayed it at the Game Awards was trash. And saying that it wasn't an RPG, it literally is the definition of an RPG. It's an action RPG, just like The Witcher was, just like the other games that was nominated was. It's not a traditional JRPG, sure. But that game was crazy good. And I feel like after they update it and, you know, patch it and, you know, do whatever tweaks, everybody's going to hop on the hype train and act like they always supported it and all that. But I'm telling you right now, I always loved that game. I just didn't say anything about it because I didn't want my game and me to get caught in that crossfire. Don't nobody want that smoke.
Honestly, I feel like we're going to have to bring you on for game hot takes on a regular basis. I'm here for it.
Yeah, I'm down because, you know, sometimes you just need somebody to be real with you.
And that was our conversation with Neil Jones, aka Ariel Knight, about all things Never Yield, the video game industry, Cyberpunk, and more. As always, it's really fun talking to Neil about games in general, whether it's, you know, during the episodes or off air when we're done recording. He's just a really, you know, friendly and you know, super knowledgeable about the industry. So, it was really great to just kind of catch up with him again.
Yeah. And I think the thing that was cracking me up, but is also like good, is Neil is someone who I think really wants to make the best version of his game and is always kind of responding to feedback. And I think takes feedback, it seems like, pretty seriously in terms of revising the game. But he also, I don't know, has like almost an antagonistic view towards people who critique the game, where he's like, sure, I'll make the fixes that you want, but I think that you don't know necessarily like what you're really after. And I don't know, that cracked me up. That was really good.
No, for sure. I mean, I think that, you know, if I think about myself in terms of my own creative work and, you know, maybe how I engage with critique or like a reception of things, I don't think I'm as like overtly challenging or confident about like sticking up for my work as maybe somebody like Neil. And I think that that's probably true of a lot of like creatives. Like there's a lot of people who tend to kind of be a little bit more shy or like, yeah, just not as like confident, I would say. And I think something that's really refreshing about Neil is that, you know, he's somebody who takes feedback and, you know, is willing to rework his different projects, as we saw with like this huge update for Never Yield. But I mean, it's really refreshing to see somebody also kind of just call people on their bullshit and acknowledge like, hey, I actually am a really skilled,
you know, at my craft, and I'm going to make sure that you know it, you know, like that. There's something cool about that.
Yeah, no, 100%. And it's like, I feel like he, again, in some ways, like voicing the stuff that I like think to myself when I'm going through an edit, where it's like, you know, when someone's like, oh, hey, can you try it this way? And I'm like, I mean, I can, but it's not going to be good. And when it when an edit does end up, you know, being for the best of a piece, I'm like, fuck, like they were right. But, you know, when they're like, actually, you have to go back to the original way that you had it because that was right. I'm like, hell yeah, fucking got him. So I don't know. I feel like I appreciate that he gives voice to that.
For sure. So, yeah, that was just kind of a quick update on everything that's been happening with Neil Jones and Never Yield. As always, like I said at the top of the show, if you enjoy what you're listening to, then definitely give us some feedback. Send us an email at theoriginstorypod@gmail.com or at our Twitter account @originstory_. And as always, make sure to leave reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Thank you, as always, to Ryan Hopper for the intro and outro music that you're listening to right now, and to Melody Hirsch for all of the design work for Origin Story. You can follow me @sad_radio_lad. Phil, where can they find you?
They could follow me @3dcisco on Twitter. And I guess one last thing that I'm thinking about it. We just started an Instagram account not too long ago. So if you are an Instagram person, we got a really pretty looking page over there. So definitely.
It's looking good.
Real good.
It's got a lot of content, got a little smiling faces. It looks good.
So, you know, give it a follow. It's @originstory.show on Instagram. And with that, Ben, I think that's all we have for him today.
Yeah. See you next time.
Bye.